Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Professor Sir John H. Lawton, CBE FRS. He is the former vice president of the British Trust for Ornithology and is currently vice president of the RSPB. And we're talking about his latest book, In Search of Birds, Pubs, People, and Places. John, welcome to the show. It is such a pleasure to talk to you about this book.
Yes, it's very, very good of you to have me on the show. In fact, I think you've shown more interest than some of the broadcasting.
I find that hard to believe because this book, first of all, for people who don't know, birders obviously keep lists, but they don't just keep lists of birds. I know very many birders that keep lists of birds they've seen in one place, like Fenway Park ballpark, or birds they've seen while they're in the loo. That's a real list, John. This is an amazing book because it's birds that are in pub signs in Great Britain. And when did this project occur to you?
Almost exactly 13 years ago, Dot and I, my wife Dot and I, were holidaying on the eastern edge of the Yorkshire Dales National Park. At a little village called Leyburn. And I noticed that in Leyburn there was a pub called the Black Swan, and in three other villages within a five-mile radius, there were three other pubs called the Black Swan or Black Swan Inn.
Weird.
Now, Black Swans don't occur as native.
No, they're Australian.
They're Australian, absolutely. And they were only discovered by Europeans in the early 1600s by Dutch explorers. And the first black swans weren't brought to the UK until about 1670. I was just intrigued why there should be three pubs in such a small area where there are no black swans called the Black Swan. And that set me off on a wild swan chase, if you like.
And we'll talk about that in a second. Yeah, you sampled over 700 pubs, which sounds like a lot, but how many pubs are there in Britain?
About 50,000.
And you identified 117 species in these pub signs. But as your book reveals, things can get complicated because you may think the pub is named after a bird like the ostrich, but it's not. But it's not. The ostrich is a great example of it. The ostrich,
absolutely. That's the name of a sailing ship. There are pubs called the ostrich, but the first one I found was named after a sailing ship. In fact, I once drove about 50 miles out of my way early on in this, near Cheltenham in the southwest England, to see a pub called the Little Owl. And when I got there, I discovered the Little Owl was a racehorse.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
So, you know, it's a bit of a roller coaster. And, of course, when I started 13 years ago, the internet in its present form simply didn't exist.
Oh, yeah.
I was traveling a lot. I was still working full time at the time. I'm retired now. And I was traveling a lot for the equivalent of the National Science Foundation, the Natural Environment Research Council in the UK, which I was chief executive of. And I was often a lot in a hotel on my own in the evening and so on. And so I started to pursue pubs in a local area, but I had to look them up in a thing called the Yellow Pages or a Thompson's Directory, and they would list all the pubs that, say, in Liverpool or York, where I live, or wherever I happen to be. And then I could find out the ones that were named after birds, and I could go and photograph them. And, of course, the internet has now made that so much easier.
Well, I was fascinated to find out that many of these pubs have websites.
They all have – virtually all of them have a website. It's very interesting. There are one or two that don't, but virtually every single – I mean, latterly, I haven't actually personally visited each pub. I've simply found it on the web. On the web. And so what I did was very nerdy, was sit down with a UK bird book and go through pubs called Bullfinch, pubs called Puffin, pubs called whatever, and it would pop up. They would pop up, and I was able to usually look at the sign, if it was interesting and accessible, photograph it, or get colleagues elsewhere in the UK to photograph it for me. It became a rather nerdy obsession, but great fun.
Well, okay, you found In 711 pubs, you found 117 identifiable species. I know what this is. I identify birds in paintings and art museums, and I know how important it is to be able to identify the species. But you have like 17 nonspecific birds, which would be like duck, four mythical species, and 35 pubs named after bird-associated things like the nest. Or the dovecote. The dovecote is another one. Dovecote, the buildings that doves and pigeons were kept.
The duck decoys.
Duck decoys.
Which were used to trap wildfowl instead of shooting them. There's a pub called the Decoy in East Anglia, but duck decoys were used to hunt wild ducks in very, very large numbers, right through to sort of late Victorian times.
Now, I found it really sad that you mentioned that no pub has been named after Avocet.
I know, isn't that interesting?
That's one of the most spectacular and birds, especially people who don't know the European Avocet is just gorgeous. And it would seem like it would be a sure thing for a pub sign.
Yes, Avocet is one. There are some others. I mean, it's very iffy. There isn't a pub called the White-tailed Eagle or Sea Eagle. Even though that is one of our most spectacular birds. There are plenty of eagle pubs, but none that are clearly identifiable as white-tailed eagles. There are several pubs where the bird on the sign is clearly an American bald eagle, but not a white-tailed eagle.
Well, you mentioned that, you know, first of all, there are these gorgeous pub signs, which we don't have anything like that in the United States, or rarely do. So it seems like the pub owner probably handed the artist a book and said, pick out an eagle and then put that on the pub sign.
Exactly. There are some really curious species pop up. I mean, there's a pub called the Cuckoo in the Midlands here, where the bird on the sign isn't a European cuckoo, but is a Jacobean cuckoo.
And you've seen that bird.
Yeah, I have in Ghana when I was working in Ghana. And I'm absolutely sure that the landlord or the pub owner gave it to the artist and said, here's a real cuckoo saying that.
Or he did a web search, and then he just looked for the one that looked most interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And there's another one exactly the same in just north of Yorkshire in County Durham, the town called Stanhope, which is called the Bonnie Moorhen. Now, Moorhen is actually...
We call it gallinule here.
Is a gallinule, absolutely. And gallinules are not bonny, are they, by any stretch?
Well, wait a minute. I'll tell you, it's a bonny day if I see a gallinule here in Massachusetts.
Yeah, sure, it's a bonny day. But
I differed with you on that point because I would call a gallinule a bonny bird to see.
Okay. But, I mean, it's very clear that actually the bonny moorhen was actually a female black grouse, one of the most spectacular
Weird.
Birds.
Oh, I love that. I love that bird.
And the females are bonny, and Stanhope is on the edge of the Durham Moors, where there are black grouse. And it was the original sign had a black grouse on it, and then one of my correspondents was able to tell me that the sign was repainted, and very clearly the landlord had given the sign writer a bird book and said, "Here's a moorhen, a proper moorhen, paint that."
Now we should probably at this point talk about what is a pub versus. Anything else that you, with a couple of other names?
Well, there are pubs, bars, and inns. There are also vaults, and but basically the three are pubs, bars, pubs, bars, and inns. A pub is a licensed premises, with a license to sell alcohol to the general public, providing they're sober. a pub called the Drover's Arms or such and such Arms were actually legally slightly different. They were slightly more upmarket and tended to have people staying overnight. So you've got pubs, bars, inns. A bar is a more general expression, doesn't have any legal definition. And an inn is usually older and gets its name from there. Nowadays they all get mixed up, but traditionally pubs and inns were legally different entities, different kinds of licenses.
Now I want to mention to the audience that your book has many, many photographs of these pub signs, and where does that tradition come from? That some people put a lot of effort and come up with these incredibly beautiful pub signs that are really gorgeous.
It's an art form. There's no question about that. It's and one of the things that attracted me to it is it is a very, very distinct art form with a long tradition going way back to the days when people were illiterate and couldn't read. And so there was no point in just having the name of the bar, pub, or inn on it because people couldn't read it. Whereas a striking sign was a good way of advertising your presence. And the more striking the sign, the more likely people were to go in and into the inn.
Yeah.
That's where the tradition comes from. Originally, of course, before that. The signs for pubs were actually physical objects. There was sometimes a tethered animal. There was sometimes the boot and shoe. There would be a boot hung outside, and then there were those images, those objects, the bay horse and all that kind of stuff got transferred to an actual sign rather than a living animal or an actual physical object hung on the wall of the pub. The whole game is to make your pub stand out from the crowd.
Yes.
And attract people in.
The variety of the artwork in your book is amazing. Some are very realistic. Some are very sort of cartoony.
Exactly.
I just have to mention one before we ran out of time. There's the owl in The Hitchhiker. One of my favorite stories in your book is the story of the sign. Now, the sign is a huge hand with the thumb out, like he's hitching, and there's an owl, a pretty sketchy, cartoony owl, sitting on the thumb. Now, you would look at the pub sign and you go, well, that's sort of interesting, but the story behind the name is really fascinating.
Yes, it's a combination. It's Richard Adams, who wrote The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, used to live very close to where that pub now is, and so did I knew this would happen.
Douglas Adams wrote the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and then
Edward Lear, that's right. And Edward Lear also used to live very close to where that pub is. It didn't used to be called his present name at all. His name was changed to capture the two locally famous people, Edward Lear and Richard Adams.
Who wrote the owl and the pussycat?
The sign is it's a hitchhiker. It's, as you said, it's an owl sitting on the hitchhiker's thumb.
Oh, man, I love that. Now, you made a list. There's so much information in this book. It's great. There's a list of the most common birds that you found in pub signs. One of them was the mute swan. And just to give an example of the kind of fascinating sort of stuff that you put under each listing, I learned a new word, swan-upping. What is that? What is swan-upping?
Well, mute swans, about 40% of all pub birds are mute swans, or white swans, therefore almost certainly mute swans. The one of them you probably have noticed.
Yep.
The book changed, the sign was changed, and he's actually a North American whistling swan, which is copied straight out of Audubon. but let's park that for a moment. The swans were very, very important birds in medieval Britain. They were edible. They were owned by the king or queen. They're the only birds in the UK, anywhere in Europe, that they were actually owned by royalty, because they were highly prized as food, and they were big, impressive birds. And so, by calling a pub various versions on the swan, the white swan, the old swan uppers, you had a royalty associations, a big, fierce, impressive, edible bird, and it spoke volumes about the nature of the pub. And that was how why they're so popular. I've lost the track. Tell me what
we were talking about. Swan upping.
The swan upping. So the swan upping was the practice of marking the swans so that the royal ownership could be established, and the king or queen also then was able to pass on some of that ownership to some of the trading guilds, the merchants and guilds, and they would mark their own swans by cutting a notch into their beak, various patterns of uh, 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 notch, two notch, three notches, and so on. And swan upping was the process of catching the swans every year on the River Thames to mark them. It's a very, very ancient tradition. It still goes on, except the swans don't get mutilated anymore. They just get ringed, banded.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Professor Sir John H. Lawton, British. He was the former vice president of the British Trust for Ornithology and is currently vice president of the RSPB, the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds. And we're talking about his latest book. It's wonderful. In Search of Birds, and in is spelled I-N-N. In Search of Birds, Pubs, People, and Places. Now, we were talking about the most common birds featured that you found featured on pub signs. Cockerels, hens, and chickens as a group are all descendants of a wild bird called the red jungle fowl. And I love, there's a story. Didn't you see one from elephant back?
Yep. The only real wild hen I've ever seen in my life was in the Corbett National Park in India. We were on the back of an elephant, my wife and I, on the back of an elephant called Lucky. We were actually looking for tigers. But this huge, and sitting on the back of the elephant watching birds is a bit like being in a boat on the sea, because you sway around as the elephant walks. And this wonderful animal put up two hens, first of all, and then just as the light was beginning to fade, a magnificent cockerel appeared and walked across the path. We didn't see any tigers, but it was a new bird.
That's all that matters. Eagles are very common. And you write about, there's an association with the rhyme, Pop Goes the Weasel.
Yes, up and down the city. I guess the children in the U.S. know the rhyme, but up and down the city road, in and out of the Eagle. And there is a pub on the city road called the Eagle. And it has actually on its sign an eagle that is either a harpy eagle or one other of the larger non-British eagles. But I've never been able to nail down exactly what it is. But the pub is still there. And the origin of the nursery rhyme, up and down the city road, in and out of the eagle, and pop goes the weasel. The words are the sign, the pub has a picture of the eagle on it. And it also has the poem on the side, but the origin is much debated and not understood.
Now, there's also a couple of eagle and child on signs. Now, I'm sort of familiar with that because there were all sorts of stories, fanciful, of eagles grabbing children.
Yep.
And I imagine where that's coming from. I just can't believe that there's pub signs that have the eagle and the child.
Well, actually, the story of the eagle and child is extremely interesting because most of them are in northwest England in the county of Lancashire. There are some outside that area, but most of them are in northwest England in the county of Lancashire, which is where I was born and brought up. And there was a pub in the town that I was brought up in called Leyland, which was called the Eagle and Child. And it was known, I was quite young and innocent in those days, it was called the Bird and Bastard. Rather than the Eagle and Child, and I never really did understand why. But it turns out that there's a place called Lythamson Towns on the coast in that part of Lancashire where John Latham, Latham being the origin of Lytham and Latham having sharing linguistic roots, had an illegitimate child by one of his maidservants because his wife was beyond childbearing age, and then pretended to find it underneath an eagle's nest and brought it up as his own daughter. And it wasn't until I brought it up as his own son, because he didn't have an heir, and it wasn't until his deathbed that he confessed that the child he brought up and claimed to have found in the eagle's nest was actually the illegitimate child of one of his maidservants. And from that, there are lots of pubs called Eagle and Child in that part of the world, and some get as far south as Oxfordshire.
There's so much information about it. Every sign seems to have a story. There's one of the more common birds is Indian peafowl. And I should say the most common is peacocks, which is the male of the peafowl. But you found that there was a single pub that was a peahen.
There is, and that is the oldest pub bird, the oldest pub with a bird on it in St. Albans. It isn't at all clear. I've been completely unable to find out why it's called the peahen. It's very unusual for a female bird to be selected for a sign. Virtually all of them are always male, or if there is a female, it's subservient to a male at the front of the sign. There are very, very few actual female signs, although the Bonnie Moorhen is another one. how the name of the peahen was chosen and why it was chosen is anybody's guess. It is indeed one of the very oldest pubs in the whole of the UK.
Wow.
It isn't just an oldest pub bird, it's the one of the oldest pubs. It's on the coaching route at, from London to St Albans. Very, very old. It's been a pub on that site since, I think, the 15th century. And nobody can tell me why it's called the peahen.
There's a game that a friend of yours said that they won, Ticks and Tipples.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of this game. Yeah, talk about what that is.
Well, Ticks and Tipples was invented by a very, very dear friend and work colleague called Bob Holt, who's a professor of ecology at Florida State University. He and Bob and I have at birdwatched, worked and birdwatched all over the world. And I sent him, once I was beginning to write the book, I sent him some stuff to have a look at. He very kindly commented, and he came back with this brilliant idea of playing a new game called Ticks and Tipples. So you go to the pub that's named after a bird. You're not allowed to go in the pub, because as Bob said, once you've had something to drink, almost you can see almost anything. And then you visit the pub, and then within 24 hours, you have to go and find the real live bird with the same name. And then you can come back to the pub to celebrate. And it might just catch on. And there were some things that you could do incredibly easily. The swan, the white swan.
Oh, yeah.
Within half an hour of almost any town in...
Anything with pigeons and doves.
Pigeons and doves, you could do it very, very easy. There'd be some you really would have to know your birds. For example, there is only one pub called the Cormorant, and that's down on the south coast. You'd have to know... there was a pub called the Cormorant, and you'd have to know where to go and look for cormorants close by, which you could do. On the other hand, you would be find it at the moment impossible to go into a pub called the Eagle and see a golden eagle within 24 hours. You couldn't do it.
What about the Bustard Inn?
The Bustard Inn is an interesting one, isn't it? That's down on Salisbury Way.
Yep.
The last site where great bustards occurred in the wild in Britain. They were shot out. And the Bustard Inn is where the hunting parties used to go and stay, because they used to fly falcons, gyre falcons, against the bustards. And that goes back a long way. Very sadly, that pub is no longer there. It's closed. But there is a reintroduction program going on for great bustards at the moment, which is proving to be really quite successful. On Salisbury Plain, there are, I think, 40 or 50 birds there now.
Wow.
And so my suggestion in the book is that they should reopen the pub.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, that's one of my favorite birds in the Palearctic. I love the great bustard.
They're weird things. I mean,
aren't
they have the same kind of bizarre display that some of your sage grouse and some of the other.
Yeah,
they're basically blooming great big sage grouse. You know, if they're not related, but they have the same kind of weird display. The males turn themselves into huge upside down feather dusters.
It looks totally weird.
They're really weird. I've only ever seen them in the wild in Hungary.
Yep.
I haven't actually seen any of the reintroduced birds in the UK. What is interesting, however, is that Salisbury Plain is a huge army range, by the way. It's a huge bit of chalk downland. It's about the only place big enough and open enough now to have bustards in Britain. And the army let bombs off and things, but they look after them pretty well. But that bird has re-established a migration route, and some of them now winter on the Somerset Levels, which is, again, a huge nature reserve area down on the Bristol Channel, where bustards used to winter 200 years ago.
Wow. Wow.
That isn't in the book. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I think that's... I'm glad that it's successful. Now, we're almost out of time, but there's so much stuff in this book. You also have birds that are out of place on the pub sign. And I think one of the examples you had was a stormy petrel, not anywhere near the ocean.
Yes, there are several birds, birds in the wrong place. It's very unclear, actually, whether the stormy petrel really referred to a bird, or whether stormy petrel in colloquial English is a very bad-tempered, difficult person. And I could, but there is something on the website for the inside. That pub's closed, but it still has a redundant website, and it looks like a bird on it. But I was never able to prove that. But there are others. There's one called the Little Tern, called the Tern, the turn in, I'm sorry. You know, if you think about it, that could be a play on words. The landlord wants you to turn in when you're driving past or cycling past or walking past. But the turn on the sign, it isn't an arctic turn or a common turn. It's a little turn, which only ever occurs. There's a bird in land is exceptionally rare, about as rare as the phalarope that you were talking about in Massachusetts. So there are quite a lot of pubs where the bird is in the wrong place. Quite a lot of pubs where the bird is in exactly the right place.
We're almost out of time, and we could talk about this book for hours. But I want to say my favorite ensign bird was the dodo.
Yes. There's only one. It's a micro pub. They tend to be modern. They're little niche pubs, often brewing their own beer with micro breweries. And the dodo is in Hanwell, just on the outskirts of London. It has a dodo on the sign. I have absolutely no idea why it's called a dodo, and I've not been able to find out.
But the sign is beautiful.
It's a lovely sign. It's on the cover of the book, you'll recall.
Is that the only extinct bird that's on your list?
That's a good question, Mark. You know, yes, I think it is.
I haven't, going through your book, I was looking for other extinct birds like the great hawk or something like that, and I didn't...
I've never thought about that. Thank you.
What's your favorite pub bird?
Oh, gosh. I think the peacock.
Okay, we'll leave it there. We're completely out of time. My guest tonight is Professor Sir John H. Lawton. He is the former vice president of the British Trust for Ornithology and is currently vice president of the RSPB. And we've been talking about his latest book. I had a great time reading this book. In Search of Birds, in spelled INN, Pubs, People, and Places. John, it's been a real pleasure. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.